welcome to the Lifetime at Work podcast, episode 53. My name is Greg Martin, and I'm an investment banker based in Toronto. My days are spent working with professionals and business leaders across Canada and the US as we each try to make our mark and impact on the world. On the side, I record this podcast to connect you with these leaders and to hear from them the career advice they wish they had once upon a time. Because yes, the story of our jobs, how they affect us, and why we do them is important. The goal of the podcast is to give you insight and confidence into your career. So each week I interview a different guest, and this week we're in the world of wealth management and leaving the family business. My guest this week is Frank Hanna. He is today in the wealth management business. He started his own company called Revolution X. He has been in it for a number of years working at different companies. But the really interesting part of his story is where he began. He began in the family business, which was a restaurant business. His dad, his two siblings are also involved in that business. And he started his career in that world and realized almost way too late, but I guess not too late, that it wasn't for him, that he wanted to get out and he needed to go against his family to learn a brand new skill, to actually be happy and enjoy what he was doing and really find something that he could be good at and have that autonomy and that success and all that he was looking for. And so it's a really interesting journey and story. I come from a family business, which I am not in, but you know, like Frank, my brother's in it. And it's an interesting conversation because that dichotomy of, okay, you can go and do something else yourself versus I can be with my family and what are the dynamics around that deciding to leave are pretty interesting. And so we get into a lot of that in this conversation about what we're trying to get out of work. So here is my interview with Frank Hanna. Well, Frank, thanks for joining me. Welcome to the Lifetime at Work podcast.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, do you want to give a backstory of yourself just to let the audience know a little bit about where you've come from and where you are now, and then we'll dig in from there.
Yeah, so appreciate that. I grew up in a family business that was predominantly restaurants, a little bit of hotel business, and you know, kind of all my life was told, hey, this is the greatest opportunity you'll ever see in your lifetime, and this is what you're going to do. And you're welcome. And ultimately grew up in that business and, you know, always thought, hey, I'd be a fool to walk away. You know, there was financially, it was a great, you know, sense of security, but ultimately got into my mid to late 20s, had a wife and two young kids and realized that I was starting to hate the business and I was working probably 90, 100 hours a week and really knew nothing else in my life, but ultimately had to make a change. So I left, had a big falling out with my family and, you know, really had no clue what I was doing. And somebody introduced the idea of becoming like a financial advisor. So I said, hey, you know what? I know a lot of people, I'll give it a whirl, did that. And that was about 2009. And, you know, realized that that was a tough racket and a sales business and a real punch you in the face reality check. But I had to bet on myself. I had two young kids and I said, hey, I can't afford to fail. So I kind of pushed through. And then once I got the fear of rejection behind me, realized I could really capitalize on this. So that business kind of grew and we've kind of evolved into a hybrid holistic financial planning company, along with, you know, I'd say a high level, you know, tax real estate practice where we do a lot of our own investments and, you know, have some really great resources to bring to the table for the fast moving entrepreneur.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm curious then, yeah, got a good sense of the business you have today, which we'll get into. How did your family originally get into the restaurant business?
So my father got like a $50,000 loan back in like 1972 to start a restaurant. He said he was like dishwashing and like bussing tables when he was like 13 years old and just said he loved and he wanted to do that, where I can't imagine, you know, figuring out that early what you wanted to do in life. But he ended up doing that. He started a restaurant. He went to school and at Florida International in Miami, and had, they've got a real strong hotel, restaurant hospitality program.
Right.
He never looked back. He ultimately, you know, went from that one restaurant to as many as 15. And they're predominantly like, Delaware, Maryland, beach resort towns.
Yeah.
So that's how he started. And, he had tremendous amount of success with it. And, I have a brother and a sister, and we were all told, hey, this is your thing. This is what you're going to do. And, you know, good luck. And, yeah. my brother and sister are still in the business, and, I wouldn't say they, hate each other, but they have their moments.
Right. And so I imagine then you were involved early in high school or whatever, working in restaurants as well.
Yeah. So I started dishwashing at 12 years old, ultimately, like, came up through the business, have, you know, played every role and worn every hat in the business. And, you know, I wouldn't trade it. It was, you know, really taught you a lot about life and the different people you're going to work with. And, you know, I think those lessons I learned growing up in that business kind of have, you know, played a role in my success in this second phase of my career. But yeah, did that from about 12 years old till about 30 years old. 30 years old, I said, hey, I gotta make a move. It's now or never. So made the leap at that point in time, and you know, just had to bet on myself.
I was gonna ask about school, like, even when you were going to school, I'm assuming that in the backdrop of everything was, hey, you're going to, so that you can use it towards the restaurant industry, right?
Yeah, 100%. So I originally was going to go get like the hotel restaurant degree. I wasn't sold on the school at that point in time. So I ended up going to another school, but we opened another restaurant in 2000 when I was halfway through college. And he talked me into transferring back to Maryland to be closer to our restaurant that we were opening up at that point in time. So then I finished those 2 years, graduated, and, you know, hit the ground running.
Gotcha. And so how did it work in terms of you guys working together? And I imagine you've got your siblings as well. Was your dad everywhere? Did he give you autonomy to say, hey, you're in charge of, you know, this part or this location? Or how was the sort of working style as part of a family business like that, especially where you got a bunch of different things going on?
Yeah, no. So he ultimately was the puppet master and called all the shots. And, you know, we used to call him everything from Saddam Hussein to, you know, any other dictator. So he wasn't, yeah. Hey, good luck. I trust you. Trust your decisions. It was ultimately like, you know, consult with me for anything above a lunch special, and I'll make the decisions there. So it was really tough. Like we had a strained relationship and a lot of resentment, and it was not good to say the least. But we have a great relationship now that I got out from that business.
Yeah, gotcha. No, it's interesting. I never really considered it, I don't think, very hard, but I have a family business. My grandfather actually began, my dad, it's the only job he's ever done. He went to university, right out of university, you know, when he graduated, right to work there. Same with my brother. He, you know, I had one younger brother, as soon as he graduated, straight into the company. And for me, I didn't want it. It was good to work there in high school and to see a business and to have that experience and all that, but there was something about it that I wanted to do on my own. And I think, especially starting out in my, I wanted a separate career. I wanted something that I could see and do myself. Yeah. And I imagine that same sort of thing happened to you. It just happened later.
Yeah, it did. You know, it was one of those deals that just, it really happened later. I said it took me about 5 years to get out of the business. I kind of knew in the back of my head, like, I was never going to be as successful as he was going to be. I was never going to have the passion for it that he had. And, you know, it was scary. It took me 5 years of, you know, floating the idea to him that maybe this wasn't my destination in life. And ultimately, I had a wife and young kids, and, you know, those personal relationships were suffering. And I decided I had to make a leap, and, probably scariest thing I've ever done, but worked out.
And so, okay, so here's a story. Then you figured you, you dive into that a little bit. You decided that at least you didn't want to do this. Did you have the new thing lined up, or did you just say, "Hey, I need to break"?
So it was one of those deals where, like, you know, I'm working 90-100 hours a week, right? I wasn't getting paid much of anything. We had like perks of like working through the business, but you couldn't enjoy them because you couldn't get away from the business.
Right.
So I ultimately had no clue and no time to go explore, interview, do whatever. So I ultimately, what little savings I had, I liquidated from some bonds and some different things. And I moved out of the area and stayed with my 92-year-old grandfather and his Kenyan nurse, and started studying for like the exams that you'd have to take for securities licenses.
Okay.
And, my wife, we had no home. So I had to sell my home, didn't have much equity. My wife and my two boys lived with her parents that were like 40 minutes away from where I was, where I was testing to go ahead and start working for this company. So I spent about 6 months with my grandfather. Some interesting stuff was going on then. And, passed the tests, and then it was all, hey, you know, you're all 100% sales, no salary, just good luck and see how it goes. And it was tough, man. They make you make a list of like all your personal relationships where you're like,
okay,
all right, here's all the people that know me. Here's all the people that love me. Here's the people that will definitely buy something from me. And they were all like, no, thanks, you know, or dodging me. Like it was terrible. I was like, man, I'm becoming the guy that nobody wants to talk to.
Nobody's
balls. And, it was tough sledding, but then, yeah, once you get a little bit of confidence in what you're doing and what you're selling, I started slowly to get a few people that would take chances on me.
Right. And what were you selling? You were selling like a financial product of some sort.
Yeah. So investments, insurance, fee-based financial advice. And, close family members, which I understand now, you know, they said, hey, you know, you might be out of this business in 6 months or a year. So why am I going to move my stuff to you when you might fail out or quit or whatever? So I got it. But it was definitely, scary at that point in time. My buddies were calling me like the appointment, like the situation in Jersey Shore, because I kept calling everybody wanting an appointment, and everybody was wanting nothing to do with me at that time.
Right. And I imagine from their perspective too, they don't want to be the first one. Like they want to be the experiment.
Nobody wanted to be the first one. So luckily, like it's tough. A lot of kids come out of school and they get into any type of sales business or this business, and it's really tough because you're young and nobody has any confidence in you. I guess had a little bit of benefit that I was 30 years old. I wasn't a young kid. I couldn't afford to fail because I wasn't on my own. My kids and my wife were counting on me, but it took time. It took a couple years to kind of get into that business. I called it like climbing a hill of quicksand. Like you just keep digging and you got to keep your head above water. And then in that business, they say your first 4 years or so, you're overworked and underpaid. And then once you kind of cross over that 4 or 5 year mark, it gets easier. You start making more money with less work, and it gets a little bit easier.
So you're initially coming out of, you sort of finished your programs, you then worked for a company, and then at some point you started your own.
Yeah. So I started working for like an insurance-based company that did like high-level estate planning. But at the end of the day, their goal was to like sell massive insurance policies to high net worth entrepreneurs. And so I learned a lot about marketing and estate planning and insurance like that. But ultimately I didn't want to be the life insurance and annuity guy.
Yeah.
I saw, you know, there was an axe to grind with the products they were pushing us to sell. So ultimately I left and went to a more independent broker dealer that had a more robust offering of products, and was there for about 6 years. And then ultimately our practice really kind of started to drive into that real estate space with a lot of like tax favored, you know, solutions that were, you know, we had a lot of demand and no supply. So we ended up going completely independent, in 2020, and we've been there ever since. And it was a home run move. And, you know, I always say, if you're not truly independent and agnostic and you've got the slightest axe to grind with whatever you're pitching to the client,
yeah,
the further you move up the food chain, they can smell you coming a mile away. Right. So it's been a breath of fresh air to really just be truly independent. And I think we've got a really unique niche in the marketplace that's, you know, extremely competitive.
Yeah. I talk to a lot of people who do sales or forced into sales in some regard, and then they hate it, or they realize it makes them quickly realize, my God, I think this is my last guest, actually said the exact same thing. But it sounded like that didn't happen with you. It sounded like you were got rejected a lot, which is just the nature of sales, but that at least you understood it and you actually hated the product more than you hated the selling. Is that true? Or
yeah, it is. Yeah. I love selling. So when you're in any type of business, you're either kind of front of the house or back of the house.
Right.
Just, I love the sell, the, you know, we call it hunting. You know, I just love like the thrill of the hunt. And once you like the higher the adrenaline you get of like landing a big deal or a big client, like I just like fed off of that. And so when I got in the business, you know, I was like, what's my niche going to be? How am I going to show value to all these other guys that are in the business? Cause ultimately you either got to find your own way or somebody's got to take a flyer on you and help you in some capacity. So my thing was, I'm going to get really smooth on the phone, and I was just gonna, you know, pound the phone all day long. And I got really good at like making calls and booking meetings with people. So I started to get like a bunch of the older senior partner guys that were like catching word that I was like a good phone guy. Cause ultimately if you can't book meetings, you can't make any money. Right. So that was my thing. I just buckled down and I like crushed the phone and I got pretty like smooth on it, and you know, ultimately started navigating my way through the process. And I said, hey, I love the sales side of it at that point in time. Yeah, you're right. I didn't love like our product lineup or solutions. And I just felt kind of sleazy pitching something that I knew wasn't the best bet for people that I was pitching. So ultimately had to figure that out and took some time, but it's worked out well.
So what is your take then on the kind of financial services, wealth planning? You know, as someone probably listening to this, they, you know, chances are they're earlier on and, you know, they're not here amassing wealth, but that they are curious about it and are, you know, naturally thrown products. There's lots of commercials from the banks and various things you can buy, people you can trust. And, you know, you've had an experience in sort of the middle of it. How would you say is the best way to navigate it? And what have you learned kind of being, again, in the middle of it?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's never too early or late to start like saving or educating yourself. Like there's so many people around you and all this noise, it's easy to like put your head down and put your blinders on and be like, ah, this isn't me yet. I'm still figuring out my stuff. You know, the smallest, you know, tidbit of financial literacy will go a long way.
Right.
So I didn't, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you know, and most people figure it out well down the road. Right. And they're like, oh man, you know, it's either too late or they're, you know, behind the eight ball. So I would say like, as a young entrepreneur, information is a good thing. I would just say, talk to as many people as possible. You know, you're going to have friends, you're going to have strangers, you're going to have people that are going to be giving you advice, soliciting you for business. You know, you may or may not be making a ton of money, but regardless, the slightest bit that you can carve off and invest somewhere is probably going to put you in a better spot long term. To when this, that may not be important to you now, it will be important to you when you're in your, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, and you're banking on all these decisions that you're evaluating right now, that are going to you know, dictate how enjoyable your retirement is.
Yeah. And I think also understanding it, what you're doing, if it sounds too good to be true, there might be a case where it might be, and absolutely. Understand if it is too good to be true, why is it too good to be true?
Yeah, 100%. That's why I say, yeah, I wouldn't jump in bed with the first person that comes along and pitches you on something. I would really, again, try to get different opinions, talk to people, listen to podcasts. You know, there's a lot of good information that you can get and kind of gather and decipher without having to be like, you know, in a selling situation where somebody's pressuring you into doing something or investing in something that may not be in your best interest. So I think, I would be a sponge and take in as much information as possible so you can make an educated decision. But the worst thing you can do is put your head down, not listen to anybody and not do anything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So flipping that a little bit, someone who's young who says, you know what, you're right, I should get into financial products, the wealth management business. I mean, how do you start? How do you actually get into it as a professional in the business?
So as a professional, you know, are you saying somebody that might be in the industry, like, or just anybody that's young?
Yeah, someone who's either in or you're trying to find their place, or potentially, you know, initially just deciding, hey, is this going to be something that? Because I think this is the decision you had to make was, I can only gamble here on so many new careers. I got to gamble on this one. Yeah. How do you know it's the right one, and how do you find that success?
Yeah, so I would say if you're in a position where you're in some financial services related industry and you think you like it and you're okay with putting yourself out there in sales and you think you're good at it, call me and I'll show you the way. If you're still trying to figure out where you may fit into the business, you know, I would say stick with it. Like I love it. I mean, I have clients that are ultra successful in different industries, and I feel like I've got the best gig in town. You know, if you can make it and withstand again those first years of you know, tough sledding, I don't think there's anything out there where there's no ceiling on your income.
Yeah.
You control your own schedule, you're your own boss. You know, I just think it's the best thing out there. So again, it's not for everybody. You know, if you're, you know, I compare it to like waiting tables. You know, if you can multitask and you can kind of put yourself out there and have somebody scream at you and bite your head off once in a while and you're okay with it, like you're ultimately selling yourself regardless of the industry you're in, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're selling financial products or rags on the corner, like if you're likable and you're willing to put in the work ethic, you can be successful. You just got to find the right opportunity.
Part of the reason even for this podcast is this choice we make in our lives about what we want to spend all this time. We've got this family time and then it goes all the other time, and some there, we got to make money probably in some of that other time.
Yeah.
This whole experience of you working in the restaurant and maybe even, you know, seeing how your dad and your siblings' approach was to that other time and that work time, how has all this perspective sort of changed how you perceive it and what you think about that approach and how what you've learned?
Yeah. My big thing now, and I tell this to a lot of young people that like reach out to me about it, is like, just try things, right? Like as many things as you can try, the best thing you can do early on is try something and realize, hey, I hate that. I don't want to do that. Rule it out, you know, take it off the table. But, you know, so I tell kids all the time, like, just try different things, take a different job. You know, I did that. I took a job one time where I was sitting in a warehouse and I just pushed paperwork and I didn't have anybody talking to me. And I was just, this is going to be the most relaxing, greatest thing ever. And I hated it. I just sat there and stared at the clock all day long. So I need to be out talking to people and doing that. But some people, you know, some people may like that thing. So my big thing would be try everything imaginable to try to figure out what you like, what you don't like. And I think that'll give you really good information going through your career, whether you go to college or not. I can't imagine. I kids today that have to pick a major in college and that's what they're going to do. It's tough. So even though you might be down a road that you think is what you like or what you should do, or somebody's telling you that's what you should do, it's also never too late to make a change or an adjustment, and try something new. So that's what I would say is, try as many things as possible. Even if you strike out, you hate it, whatever, just, I think it'll give you valuable experience to put you in a good spot to finding where you're supposed to be in life.
Do you think that your dad and siblings, like, it sounds like they didn't do that. Do you think they were missing stuff? They missed something? And no, not to say that their lives are terrible, but it's just that, you know, by not doing that, they maybe are kind of missing out on what they just don't even know.
Yeah. So this is what I would say to that. So my father, like he said he wanted to do this from 12 years old, and he's addicted to it, and he's a freak, and just his mind never stops. So I think he's okay. My brother is a lot like my dad, and I think he probably never ever deviated from, like, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do. I think he likes it to some degree. My sister, however, I think hates it with a passion, but she's too scared to leave. Yeah. So I've tried to guide her and say, hey, look, come work for me. Come try something else. You'll be okay. But yeah, I definitely feel for people that get in a spot where they can't make a maneuver, whether it's just financial or they're too scared to roll the dice and try something new. But yeah, again, it was the scariest thing I ever did. I would go home on a Friday afternoon feeling pretty good about my week. And by Monday morning, I was scared to death that I wasn't doing enough and I was going to fall flat on my face and fail.
How did you repair the relationship with your dad? You said it's good now or much better anyways.
Yeah,
was there one thing or did it just happen over time?
He called me every name in the book and just said, hey, you're the biggest idiot I've ever met. And you're going to regret this for the rest of your life when I left. So we didn't talk for probably 6 months. I think ultimately, we slowly started getting back to where we were cordial, friendly. And I think when he started seeing me have success in this business, he was like, all right, I'm proud of you. Like, I get it. You know, I really respect you as more like a peer than a son. And I see him all the time. And I'm like, dude, if you weren't such a piece of whatever and had your foot on my throat, like constantly, like I wouldn't have had the cojones to like business. I said, I joke with him. I said, if you weren't so brutal to me, I wouldn't have had the courage to leave. And so thank you for that. I appreciate it. Cause my life's great now. And, you know, I have a great life and
yeah. That's a great optimistic perspective. I love that. Yeah. I think it's a challenging relationship. So what would you say now to parents, say, or for, because we do this, right? We sort of think that, and I think it comes from this idea that we're older and we've had all this experience and we know what's best for our kids. Maybe we do sometimes though, and I think it's hard for every parent to pull back from that. But do you need to pull back from that? Where, when? I don't know. How do you think about it in context of your kids?
It's a great question, because I've got an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, and an 11-year-old, and my 18-year-old's going to college. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm trying to guide him towards the right place for him. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, hey, when I was going through any of this, I was told this is what you do. And I don't care what you think. Everything else is wrong. So although I do in the back of my mind, I say, hey, you know what? Like, you know, if you want to work for me one day, which I think would be fantastic and you'd love it, here's what you might want to consider. But ultimately, hey, it's your choice. I'll support you in whatever you want to do. But life's tough. Life's expensive. So make sure you figure out what you're going to do. So to your point, there's a part of me that's always kind of like, hey, just do what I say, because I know what I'm doing and you don't. But I'm trying to let them figure it out on their own so they can, you know, make a decision that's best for them, regardless of what they do in life.
Yeah. Well, because we do need to make our own mistakes. We can't, that is just part of learning, or at least I believe that. And if we don't have it, then we tend to not do it. It's life is, it would be too simple if we could just listen to our parents and our lives were amazing. Yeah, but that was that was what your dad was, I think, trying to do. But
I say that all the time. You won't appreciate the wins and the triumphs if you've not been through failures and mistakes and all that type of stuff. It just makes everything sweeter, and you've got to go through that. So I think it's good. Yeah, mistakes, issue. I've done plenty, and it gets you to a point where you really, appreciate not only your career, your life, family, you know, friends, like everything's sweeter because you went through those rough times. So I always say it. Just keep pushing. Just if you don't quit, you'll be fine in the end.
Yeah. So what about other people? Do you have any advice for people who are potentially in a family business situation? And I mean, it didn't work out for you, but in how to navigate that, because not everyone who works for their parents or with their parents is going to be miserable. And there are potentially, you know, can be pieces there that really make things work. Do you have advice for either the the offspring or the parent?
Yeah, I would say, just probably cliche, but you know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
And again, there's circumstances that prohibit people from moving away from businesses that they may not be in love with. But I would say it's never too late to make a move if you're not happy. So if you're not happy where you are, you know, I hope and pray that you got the people around you that truly care about you that would understand. But again, I went to, you know, went through a cauldron of hell to get out of my family business and get where I am now. So I think, if you don't absolutely love it, go to the people that ultimately most likely love you and care about you, and float the idea. And even if they say no, you know, listen to your heart do what you think is best.
It is, I imagine, though, motivating to do that and to have your family tell you you can't do anything. Yep. And then you just say, no, I'm going to try it. And then you, like, the pressure for you to succeed is high. Like that's I imagine is also motivating if you turn that into that.
It is. And that motivated me a lot when he and people would say, you can't do it. You're not going to do it. You're going to be back. You're going to fail. We're going to hold it against you when you come back because you turned your back on us. All that stuff like fueled me. I don't know if I would have, there was definitely days where I said, what the hell am I doing? Like this is scary. This is, you know, but I just did what I, you know, had to do to survive. I live with my 92-year-old grandfather and his Kenyan nurse. And, she wanted to listen to, I would sit in this old house in the middle of nowhere, and she wanted to listen, or she wanted to watch the gospel channel on TV at one TV. He wanted to watch like war documentaries. The only show we could come to agreement on that the three of us could watch together was Two and a Half Men. But that was a that was a humbling situation. And then my wife visited one time, and he was kind of going through dementia and Parkinson's, and he was hallucinating, and he was going, Frank, you know, who were all those people at the house? I saw some people downstairs. And my wife visited, and he was like, who are those girls in the house? And she freaked out. And I'm like, there's no girls. I have no friends. I have no family. Nobody here.
That's just me. Well, you said something interesting about your dad treating you as a peer rather than a, I don't know what the alternative is, employee or a child. Yeah. And that sounds like another probably piece of advice. You have to be able to do that at some point. And just trust them, as you do with any employee. Like the same thing sort of happens. You hire someone, I think initially you probably assume, especially if they're a low level, like they don't know anything. But at a certain point, you do have to say, otherwise, it's just a terrible working environment. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, whether it's a employee, coworker, manager, you know, father and child, mother and child, like you've got to come to some degree of you know, respect, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I don't know, honestly, if I was doing another job or had, you know, be in another position in my life, whether he would have the same respect for me. But I think the value that I've been able to bring to, you know, colleagues of his and him personally, again, he wanted nothing to do with me for years as far as being a client or doing any business with me, and ultimately gave us a shot, and he's seen really positive results. And now he's a big advocate. Like, he runs out and tells people about our business, and he's on social media, and so he's got a lot of energy that he puts towards that. So it's a good feeling to, you know, come all this way and be there.
My oldest kid is 7. Yours is, I think, at 18. Are you still a child? Do you feel like, are they?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was trying to think of when's the right time. I'm not ready. Still very much a child. But I think it's getting older where you then can say, all right, you can make decisions.
I said that to my wife last night. I'm like, I don't know how these kids are going to survive on their own when we're not around, you know, when they're at school. So he's a good kid. He's got a long ways to go. So again, I think you just gotta, off of what you said, you gotta let them experience stuff, fail, you know, learn lessons. And I think that's life. But yeah, I don't see a time in the near future where he's gonna be rocking on his own and not needing us.
Yeah. So what are your goals then going forward, the rest of your career, as you think about the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty self-motivated. Like, I think, you know, I'm at a point where, you know, I've got, financial, you know, wherewithal and, you know, I'm in a position where, financially I'm way ahead of where I thought I would be. But I'm very competitive. So I have a lot of peers in the business, and I just want to be the best. I just push and push. And I actually spent a lot of time mentoring like younger entrepreneurs. A lot of people think they want to get into finance or sales and reach out and say, hey, I want to do this. And I do spend a lot of time just trying to like give advice, guide people. Cause I see the opportunity ahead of some of these kids. And I say, hey, you know what, knowing what I know, if you do what I say and you listen to me, like I promise you can get to a great spot. But I also think the kids today, and not all of them, but you know, it's different from when you and I grew up and the generation before us. I think it's a lot different. And I think some of the tools that the kids have today are not as, as strong as they could or should be. And it's easy to quit and give up where maybe it wouldn't have been when we were growing up. So again, I would tell any young entrepreneur is, you know, work ethic is everything. If you put in the time and the work, like, and you know, what's the saying, the harder you work, the luckier you get. Right. Like, I think that's big. So I'm, you know, personally for my business, like I'm just looking to grow. Like we set goals, we monitor goals, good, bad, or indifferent. We push each other. I've got a few different partners and people that we work with, and we really like challenge each other. And I think you need that in your life to reach your potential. So I'm looking to grow. I'm looking to be the best that I can be. And I don't see a limit or a number or a figure that is my number. There's different things in life that I want to be able to do. And I'm slowly crossing them off the list.
Yeah. And are there any big changes going on or things that have changed in your industry or like ways things are moving that you've noticed and might impact someone kind of getting in a career or you?
Yeah, I think the industry is like evolving, and the players in the space, you know, without getting into different names, like there's the staples that everybody's heard of in terms of like the firms. You know, I would say like your firms that were like, you know, the stockbrokers back in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, where you were stock picking, that type of stuff, like the Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, those type of companies. They're, I wouldn't say they're not good companies, but it's gotten more challenging where groups like that used to dominate. And then like the insurance based broker dealers, like your big insurance companies, Prudential, you know, the New York, all those kind of companies that are ultimately motivated by insurance and annuity sales. I would just say it's gotten a lot more challenging to have success in those environments. And now you're seeing a lot more people go the RIA route or the truly independent broker dealer route. And I think that's where you're going to have the most success. So I would say if you're in the business, I love the business. I would stick with it wherever you're at. But if you're really, truly trying to find the right lane in, that independent model is your best chance for success right now, where 10, 20, 30 years ago, those big staple names were what people respected, and that's where people went. And I think it's just evolving on transparency and what the customer and client wants and sees now. And they've educated themselves at a higher level. So now they're like, hey, you know what? I know what I don't want, and I'm hearing what I you know, I'm looking for. So I would say if somebody's listening that's in the business and is not 100% certain that they are where they're supposed to be, happy to chat and give you my honest perspective, because this is my third spot within the industry and I had to figure it out on my own.
Would you ever invest in a restaurant business?
I personally, I would say probably not. I mean, there's some really good operators. A lot of my clients are really strong operators. Like I might on a one-off situation, if I had incredible confidence in somebody that was going to do that. Yeah. But as far as like to take a flyer, hey, I want to open a restaurant and bar. Like I've got clients that have been ultra successful in different industries. And they say in a meeting, hey, I'm thinking about opening a bar or restaurant. And I literally want to reach across the table and grab them by the throat and say, do not do it. I can promise you you will hate it. I mean, there's a lot of successful people in it, but I think the statistic is like less than 10 or 5% of restaurants are still in business 5 years after opening. So if that's what you love and that's what your passion is, go for it. But if you're thinking that, hey, I like hanging out in the bar or restaurant, it looks fun and it looks like people are making money and I might try it, I would be very hesitant to do that.
Yeah. You certainly an area that you would know, and I figure, yeah, be able to pick some winners, losers potentially, but it is, I agree with you. Yeah. Someone new to it.
You really have to trust them. I mean, I've got one client that has a 3-block radius indoor restaurant bar. He literally has 32 bars in the place. It's the most amazing place you'll ever see. If you've been to Ocean City, Maryland, you probably know it. It's called Secrets.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a capacity about 5,000 people. But when this conversation comes up, I say, I don't care if it's Secrets or it's a little corner deli, it's the same stuff, right? You got, yeah, you got people stealing from you, people wasting money. You know, if you're not on top of it, service suffers. It's all the same problems, just different size and scale. But you either have to live in the business or find some people that you trust that are going to live in the business. Cause you know, if you think you're going to get in there and casually hang out, take your eye off it, and not live and breathe it, you're going to lose your house.
Okay. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more about your business today, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, I would say, my office number is 610-232-0011, or feel free to email me. It's Frank, F-R-A-N-K, Hannah, H-A-N-N-A, at R-E-V as in Victor, X as in X-ray, wealth. So Frank Hannah at Rev, xwealth.com. Happy to talk to anybody, even if it's just a little bit of mentorship and information guidance. I really do enjoy talking to people and helping people, even if there's no, you know, financial opportunity to do anything in that regard.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks for the insights and joining me today on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Greg. Enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you're a fan of the podcast, please rate or like it on Spotify or Apple. That always helps in getting the podcast out to more people. You can also follow us in the podcast on LinkedIn and share or just even like any of the content that is coming out there or from my page. That also always helps promote it. I'll have lots more great episodes coming for you in the future. And until then, it's good to stand out.